Just start now? Michael? Distinguished members of the forum, distinguished observers and friends, ladies and gentlemen, with great pleasure and honor, I now declare open the 7th session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. According to the tradition of the Indigenous people, an Indigenous elder addresses the opening meeting and offers words of blessing to the session. I now invite a member of the Traditional Council of Chiefs of the Onondaga Nation, Chief Tracy L. Shenandoah of the Eel Clan, to deliver his message.
People of the earth, now it's time you all listen. The way the Creator has intended. Number of people here on earth, we give thanks the first thing we do. Everything he has intended on this earth, everything to be peaceful, I put these words out. We'll keep that in our minds as one. We give thanks to our mother the earth. Her duties are still going on, what the Creator has intended. We give great thanks and one mind to our mother the earth. We put it that way in our minds. And so next, everything he has planted on earth, the duties are still being carried on, what was intended, that we feed our people. And there's medicines here to help us when we feel sick. We give thanks. Great thanks for all the medicines. And we put that in our minds as one. And now, so it's planted. That the food substances will take care of us. and it's the strawberries. And we'll keep that in our minds that we give thanks as one. And it is planted. That all the plants, they all have names, and the leader of the trees is the maple, and there's a medicine that comes from it. We put everything as one in our minds. We all become of one. We leave it that way in our mind. And so now he's talking about the animals that I were put here. They run about in the forest. They all have duties also. On earth where we walk about, we all walk in peace with the animals. And we put it as our minds as one. And so to let it be that way in our minds. And now this. And so the food substance is the three sisters of the food source, the corn, the beans, and the squash, and they'll take care of us. And we'll put it together, our minds as one, and give thanks to all the food substances. And so now, the water that's put through the veins of the earth. By the days and by the nights, it travels through the veins. And we give thanks. We roll our minds up as one and give thanks to the waters. Keep it that way in our minds. And now the winds. We give thanks to the winds that are still going through like that was intended by the Creator. We roll our minds, roll all this thanks into one in our minds, and we leave it that way in our minds together. And coming from the west is the thunders, and we give thanks that they still carry the waters here. So we roll our thoughts up as one, and we give thanks to the thunders from the west, and we'll keep it that way in our minds. And then now, our elder brother, the sun, into the sky world there. He warms our bodies, he warms our earth. He lifts our minds up, our elder brother. And so we give thanks to our elder brother. And our minds will keep it as one. And also up to the sky, we give thanks to the stars. As one, our minds are to give thanks to the stars that are still carrying on their duties. And the four beings that watch over us, like what was intended. That they carry on their duties to look over us in all directions that we travel here on earth. We put it together as one in our minds, and we give thanks and keep it that way. We have a messenger that came too also. Lifts up our minds. And he passed on the words of the Creator to us through a message, and we give thanks that we still hear it. And from the sky world, from the Creator, he sends down his love to us, and that we carry on as people. By the daytime and by the nighttime, we carry on that love that he has intended us to use. And we put our minds as one and keep it that way in our minds. And we're to use also soft words. When we speak out, no sharp words will be put out at the gatherings. Because we're looking out for the peace of the faces yet to come. The faces yet to appear on this earth is what we're working for. We use the good mind. We use the good mind and work toward the faces yet to come. And that is all.
Place in the universe. Distinguished members of the forum, we shall now proceed to the first item on the agenda, the election of the chairperson for this session. I first give the floor to Ms. Tonya Frischner.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson, and warm greetings. It is my great honor to bring forward to you the person who will serve as our chairperson, someone that has done exemplary work, and we pray that the Creator will stand with her, as we will stand with her, for her to continue this exemplary work. As Chief Shenandoah just mentioned, we are sending forward our choice with the power of the good mind, that she does continue that work in that way, with the power of the good mind. And it is my great honor, Mr. Chairperson, as requested, to bring forward to you Mrs. Victoria Tolley Corpus.
I thank Ms. Tonya Frischner for the nomination of Ms. Victoria Tolley Corpus as the chairperson for the seventh session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. May I take it that it is the wish of members of the Permanent Forum to elect Victoria Tolley Corpus as the chairperson for the seventh session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues by acclamation. It is so decided. Now I wish to extend my warmest congratulations to Ms. Victoria Tolley Corpus on her election. I'm confident that she will, as she did last year, guide this session of the forum to a successful conclusion. I now invite Victoria Tolley Corpus to take over the proceedings of the session.
I would like to thank Mr. Jomo, Assistant Secretary General for Economic Development, for opening the session. Before proceeding, I should also like to thank the members of the Permanent Forum for re-electing me as the chairperson of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Distinguished members of the forum, distinguished observers, friends, ladies and gentlemen, as chairperson of the forum, of this session, I am particularly happy on behalf of the members of the forum to extend a warm welcome to our distinguished guests at this opening meeting. His Excellency Mr. Evo Morales Ayma, President of Bolivia, Mr. and His Excellency Ambassador Leo Mirores, President of the Economic and Social Council. Mr. Jomo Sundaram, Assistant Secretary General for Economic Development. Distinguished members of the forum, the Secretary General of the United Nations, Mr. Ban Ki-moon, addressed a message of welcome to our forum, and I invite you to view his message now.
Excellencies, this session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues meets at the historic crossroads. With the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, the Permanent Forum takes on a new role. We will work to translate the Declaration into a living document at the national and international levels. As you do, you will promote the UN Development Agenda and its vision of development for all. This includes the poorest and most vulnerable, a group to which many indigenous peoples belong. I applaud your choice of climate change as the special theme of this session. Indigenous peoples live in many of the world's most biologically diverse areas. As custodians of these lands, they have accumulated deep, first-hand knowledge about the impacts of environmental degradation, including climate change. They know the economic and social consequences, and they can and should play a role in the global response. I also welcome your focus on the Pacific for this session. This will spur greater cooperation and solidarity among governments, indigenous peoples, and the UN family in this important region. And you meet in the International Year of Languages. Appropriately, the forum is paying close attention to this issue. Indigenous languages represent an overwhelming majority of all languages spoken today, with most facing the threat of extinction. By protecting and promoting indigenous languages, we advance the dignity and human rights of the indigenous people and preserve the cultural diversity of all humankind. I look forward to the forum's recommendations on all these important fronts and wish you a most successful session. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ban Ki-moon, the Secretary General of the United Nations. We shall now proceed with some organizational matters for this session. I now propose to members of the forum to proceed with the adoption of the provisional agenda for the seventh session as contained in document E/C19/2008/1. Are there any comments on the agenda as contained in document E/C19/2008/1? Mr. Clavero, you have the floor.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. Distinguished colleagues of the forum, distinguished assistants here, everybody present, I speak on behalf of an agreement reached in our preparatory session on a unanimous basis for the forum. We wish to suggest a change to the agenda because of a unanimous concern. We wish to emphasize that the agenda for the seventh session was largely agreed upon before the adoption by the General Assembly of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This agenda, therefore, does not duly reflect this important new element. Our idea is also to create a precedent so that in all subsequent sessions of the forum, the agenda always be drawn up, not just considering rights, but specifically the rights of indigenous peoples and indigenous rights themselves. If we do this call this a new point, we could term this the implementation of the new mandate of the UN Permanent Forum on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The mandate is based on Article 42 of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. In this way, we trust that everybody will understand that in Article 42, we do not extend the areas which fall within the prerogative of this forum, but we establish a new mandate coming directly from the General Assembly, requiring specifically that we endeavour to ensure the full implementation pursuant to Article 42 of the rights enshrined in that statement. This point would be item 4, which refers to our mandate, but it would be 4.1. This is fundamental and should come first. The rest should ensue naturally. So at present, what we have as point 4 should be 4.2. By means of this proposal, we wish to upset the sequence of the issues on the agenda to as a smaller degree as possible. So we would like to see this point as 4.1. And the time devoted to it could be scheduled in the afternoon of Monday the 28th. And the morning of Tuesday the 29th. That then is the proposal, which, as I stated, was adopted by the forum in its preliminary meeting. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, my distinguished colleague, Bartolome Clavero Salvador. I shall take it that the provisional agenda is acceptable to all members of the forum as orally amended. We shall now proceed to the election of other officers for this session. I understand that through informal consultations, the following members are nominated as vice chairpersons: Mr. Carlos Mamani Condori, Ms. Tonya Gonila Frischner, Ms. Lilian Musangi Mbela, and Mr. Pavel Soliansiga. Mr. Michael Dodson is nominated as rapporteur. May I take it that the members of the forum wish to elect the nominees as the vice chairpersons and rapporteur by acclamation? It is so decided. I now would like to congratulate Mr. Carlos Mamani Condori, Ms. Tonya Gonila Frischner, Ms. Lilian Musangi Mbela, and Mr. Pavel Soliansiga for their election as vice chairpersons, and Mr. Michael Dodson for his election as rapporteur. I now invite the rapporteur, Mr. Dodson, to take his seat in the podium. Your Excellency, the President of Bolivia, Mr. Evo Morales Ayma, Your Excellency, Ambassador Leo Mirores, President of the Economic and Social Council, Mr. Jomo Sundaram, the Assistant Secretary General for Economic and Social Affairs, distinguished members of the Forum, Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, distinguished observers from member states, indigenous peoples' organizations and nations, the intergovernmental system, non-governmental organizations, the academia, media, indigenous sisters and brothers, indigenous youth, and indigenous parliamentarians. It gives me a great pleasure to welcome you and address you today at the seventh session of the Permanent Forum, which has devoted its special theme to climate change, biocultural diversity and livelihoods, the stewardship role of indigenous peoples, and new challenges. This year, a record number of more than 3,300 peoples have pre-registered for this session. Let me first pay my respects to the Onondaga Nation and peoples who are original inhabitants of this land, and to thank them for having us here again. Let me also acknowledge and thank the President of Bolivia, Mr. Evo Morales Ayma, for taking time out of his busy schedule to be here at this seventh session of the UN Permanent Forum. This is the first occasion ever that a president of a member state has addressed the UN Permanent Forum. We hope getting a president who is an indigenous leader or who cares about indigenous peoples to address our sessions will become a tradition, as this will provide inspiration and strength to indigenous peoples in this world. The seventh session of the Permanent Forum will be especially significant since it is the first session to take place after the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The adoption of the Declaration is a major victory for the global indigenous peoples movement, and this is a major instrument that will reshape the relationships between indigenous peoples and states and the society at large. The forum has contributed in getting the declaration adopted and will play a key role in ensuring its implementation. We are expected to place major focus this year on discussing how it will discharge its new mandate under Article 42 of the Declaration, which mentions the forum explicitly as a body to follow up and promote the implementation of the Declaration. The theme for this session is crucial and very timely, as climate change has become a global priority issue, especially in the past few months, just before and after the Bali Conference of Parties. Climate change, no doubt, is a major concern for us indigenous peoples all over the world, not only because we are impacted both by the problem and the solutions, but more importantly, because of the contributions that we can make to mitigate it and the ways we are adapting to it. I regard climate change as the ultimate evidence of how unsustainable the dominant development model is, and the strongest argument on why we should change radically the unsustainable consumption and production system perpetuated in our midst. While our ancestors and us have adapted to climate change for thousands of years, the magnitude and accelerated pace of climate change in this present era is unprecedented, presenting major challenges to our capacity to adapt. This is not only because of the magnitude of the impacts, but also because the support from the international community has not been forthcoming. As stewards of the world's biodiversity and cultural diversity, and with our traditional livelihoods and ecological knowledge, we can significantly contribute to designing and implementing more appropriate and sustainable mitigation and adaptation measures. We can also help craft the path towards developing low-carbon and sustainable communities. Let me briefly turn to some highlights of what is new and how this year's session is going to address the theme and the mandated areas of the forum. The forum has again invited the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Fundamental Freedoms of Indigenous Peoples and other human rights rapporteurs to have a dialogue with the forum. The outgoing rapporteur, Mr. Rodolfo Stavenhagen, will be there, as well as the incoming rapporteur, Mr. James Anaya. In addition, the special rapporteur on the right to education, Mr. Munoz, will be with us. Given that 2008 has been proclaimed by the UN as the International Year of Languages, a half-day plenary session will be held on Thursday, 24th April, in the afternoon, with UNICEF, a minister from Ecuador, and indigenous experts sparking off the debate. There are various reports that will feed into this session, including the International Expert Group meeting on indigenous languages, the report of the annual session of the Interagency Support Group on indigenous issues, the Permanent Forum technical paper entitled Impact of Climate Change Mitigation Measures on the Territories and Lands of Indigenous Peoples, other satellite meetings held during the year on indigenous peoples and climate change will feed into the forum's proceedings, including regional meetings held in Latin America, in Asia, the Arctic, Europe, an international expert meeting in Australia, and others. I urge you to spare some time to become familiar with 35 documents and 11 conference room papers submitted by the forum and take them into account in your interventions. A half-day regional focus on the Pacific will be held. Speakers include introductory remarks by Michael Dodson, a permanent forum member for the Pacific region, a representative from the United Nations Agency, a representative from the Pacific Indigenous Caucus, Ambassador Colin Beck from the Solomon Islands Mission to the United Nations, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Justice Commissioner, Mr. Tom Kalma. The purpose of this half day is to identify the issues, challenges, and positive measures of cooperation to improve the situation of indigenous peoples in the region, agencies and indigenous organizations making presentations. It is also very timely that the Pacific is now our regional focus. It is in this region where we have now a phenomenon called climate change refugees or environmental refugees. This year, the Permanent Forum will focus on the implementation of recommendations of previous sessions. As in previous sessions, the Permanent Forum members have emphasized that monitoring the implementation of recommendations is a crucial matter. Hence, strategic desk reviews have to be prepared by the Secretariat of the Forum of 10 MDG country reports, so the Forum will be assisted in its monitoring work. In addition, desk reviews of 10 Common Country Assessment, United Nations Development Assistance Framework, have also been prepared for the same purpose. I should again mention that a database, which is kept updated by the Secretariat of the Forum on the implementation of the recommendations of the 2007 session, is posted on the website. In closing, I would like to reiterate my thanks to my co-members of the Permanent Forum for their confidence in me to steer this session again and for being such good team players. I would also like to thank our Secretariat, who have been tirelessly working to prepare for this session. The forum members have been engaged with various processes at the national, regional, and international level to facilitate the implementation of the Permanent Forum's recommendation and also raise awareness of the issues important for indigenous peoples. However, the effective participation of indigenous peoples in designing and implementing policy remains a key challenge. I would also like to thank the representatives of indigenous peoples, organizations, and nations, the members of the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Issues, and the governments who likewise have done their share in helping implement the Permanent Forum's recommendations. Finally, I would like to pay tribute to the indigenous peoples of the world who continue to struggle for their rights and are realizing, in the face of all odds, their self-determined development or development with identity. Many of you have traveled for many days and from faraway places to participate in this session. Let us all work together to make this session meaningful for all indigenous peoples of the world, especially those who cannot be with us today. Let us not miss the opportunity to make the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples a living document by ensuring that all our deliberations will be significantly guided by it. This we owe to all those who have laid their lives for our struggles, our elders who took active part in drafting the declaration but have already passed away, and the seven generations coming after us. Thank you very much. I shall now give the floor to His Excellency, Mr. Evo Morales Ayma, President of Bolivia. You have the floor, sir.
Bueno, muchas gracias. Primero, saludar.
Thank you very much. Firstly, now, I should like to express my thanks to our chairwoman and the others for leading this very important forum for the life, equality and dignity of indigenous peoples. I would also like to thank this permanent forum, which I would say is not so much on indigenous peoples, but rather on the models of living together in the community in solidarity with the indigenous peoples of the world as organized by the United Nations. And seeing brothers, indigenous peoples here from Latin America, South America, strengthened by your presence, we share many memories with you. With some of you, we recall, for example, the campaign, the 500 years of indigenous people's resistance, the campaigns of the 80s and the 90s. There are many events in Guatemala, Nicaragua, and other countries. These come to mind. The decades-long struggle of indigenous peoples is part and parcel of a permanent struggle for equality and justice for indigenous peoples. We also have many memories of having participated in indigenous peoples' summits in Latin America, in the UN, in Geneva. I think with some of the brothers present here, we share many memories. And receiving this invitation, I share it with the representative of the Union of Indigenous Peoples in Bolivia and with this forum addressing the particular issue of climate change. We, as an indigenous movement, believe that we are also human beings. We have the same rights and the same responsibilities as anyone else, although in this indigenous movement in my country and in many other countries in Latin America, we are those who are most attacked, humiliated, and despised. And indeed, in some occasions in the past, we have been condemned to extermination. We know that in many countries, in many regions, there has been much resistance with the awareness that everybody in movements from the grassroots level in communities. We have organized ourselves to defend land, to defend the basic services to which we're entitled. And this means that we have a duty to fight more for the rights of indigenous peoples. This permanent forum of the United Nations and other similar bodies can provide us with economic models for the survival of the indigenous peoples in the world. When we talk of indigenous peoples, the indigenous issues are linked with the environment and ecological issues and the issue of climate change. We feel that we have the ethical and moral right to talk of these things as indigenous peoples because we have historically lived in harmony with Mother Earth. It is we, the indigenous peoples, who have defended this Mother Earth, our planet Earth. It is essentially the indigenous peoples who have fought, who are fighting, and who will continue to fight. As I say, in my country, now we have achieved the presidency, so we can achieve justice and equality. We found ourselves without land in my country. There were the major land owners who were mobilized, but they, our families who don't care for justice and equality, who don't want to lose their privileges. And this then is an ongoing struggle. And this is why I feel that this sort of conference, this sort of event with the indigenous peoples, leaders of the world, playing a part in international organizations aiming for equality, this sort of event brings together people from the various countries. To see how it is possible to make reparation for the harm of 500 years. So we welcome those who are seeking so to do. We want to find a way of expressing a way in which we can live well in our countries with our vision of Mother Earth. Because for the indigenous people's movement, the earth is our life. And it is not possible for a capitalist model to turn our Mother Earth into a capitalist good. And here, the indigenous movement shares with many other organizations a new way of looking at the Earth, humanity in this planet. And if, over the last years, we have seen climate factors which are causing harm with floods, earthquakes, global warming, in my country, I would say that the first opponent has been the national disasters in 2006 and 2007, and we've seen the disastrous floods. We saw the El Nino, but this year things are worse still. We have the Niña phenomenon. And I would say that the Niña has been even more aggressive. Many lives have been lost. And when we talk with authorities in many areas, the local authorities, the departmental, national authorities, the conclusion we reach is that these authorities are to be blamed if they do not look at a model and at a system that I would say we could debate, not just at this level, but with other communities, with other grassroots organizations. I would say to you, brothers and sisters, leaders present here, that the most important thing in life is to be in permanent contact with our peoples. And as president, I would say, when it comes to giving answers, it is more a question of receiving proposals. We have to listen to what our people are asking for. I would say very sincerely, though, it is very difficult to heed the cries after so many years of exclusion. And in this framework here, I come to share with you and propose for a debate the 10 commandments for saving the planet, humanity, life. Firstly, if we want to save our planet Earth, to save life, to save mankind, we have a duty to put an end to the capitalist system. If we do not put an end to capitalism, it will be impossible for us to imagine that there will be equality and justice on planet Earth. And the serious effects of the climate change are not the results of human beings. In general, it is the current capitalist system which is inhuman with its unbridled industrial development. This is why I believe that it is important to put an end to the exploitation of human beings and to put an end to the pillage of natural resources. To put an end to destructive wars for raw materials or for the market. The plundering of energy, particularly fossil fuels. Excessive consumption of goods, the accumulation of waste. The capitalist system, alas, allows us only just to heap up waste. And this is a framework which gives egoism, individualism, regionalism, a thirst for earning, thinking just of luxury and not of human beings who live on planet Earth. If we really do want to save this planet, we have to put an end to, even to eradicate, that's the better term, the capitalist system and not have the countries of the South paying external debt. It is the ecological debt that has to be paid. The South with all countries of the world. Then, secondly, we would denounce war. I wish to say that after having thought very deeply in my country by means of a new political constitution for the state of Bolivia, which has to be put to the people for a consultation, we intend to denounce war. Who wins as a result of war? It is not the people who win. It is only the imperialists. It is not nations who win, just the super nationals. The war is to the advantage of small families, not to peoples. I think of our brothers in Paraguay, the Guaraníes, the war in 1932-35, the Chaco War. If we think of revising history and nations, we have looked at wars for natural resources, for fossil fuels. And in this forum, in the indigenous forum, which leads, it is important for us to denounce these wars, which only turn to the advantage of a few small families, the supranational. We must put an end to military intervention, to the occupation of countries by other countries, with the pretext, for example, in the Andes in South America, of combating trafficking in drugs. Sometimes other pretexts are used, for example, weapons of mass destruction. These essentially are just pretexts. But they bring with them many problems affecting people's lives, social problems. And hence it is important that looking at events such as this, we should consider how we can put an end to such wars. Brothers and sisters, I would say again that in these wars, it is not presidents and ministers who die, neither do the leaders of multinationals. Only peoples die, peoples who are falsely exploited to defend certain interests, which are really the interests of supranationals. We would also like to propose that the trillions of money earmarked for war should be channeled to make good the damage of the environment, to make reparation to the earth. Then a third proposal, a world without imperialism, without colonialism, bilateral multilateral relations are important. We believe in dialogue, in social harmony. However, these relations should not be seen as one country being dependent upon or subordinate to another. Alas, in some bilateral meetings, for example, in my country, there is just conditioning with regard to depriving us of natural resources, of combating social movements. We were an associative movement. We were considered as terrorists. If we look at our history, those sectors which were mobilized with ideological clarity, fighting for our country. We were accused of being communists, of being Reds, and in the 90s in particular, it wasn't the label of communists or Reds that was used, but of drug traffickers. This happened to me. Many brothers from Bolivia are present here, and they know this, but as from the 11th of September 2001, the indigenous activists have been accused of being terrorists when the pretext of combating terrorism was used. It meant combating indigenous peoples and indigenous movements. Hence, we have to curb such interests, and they, with pretexts, try to turn a colony into a subjugated empire. We have these new interests in this new millennium. We need to look at complementarity and not unfair competition amongst peoples or nations. We need to take into account the profound asymmetries that exist from one family to another, from one country to another, and from one continent to another. I would say something important here in the most recent statistics that I looked at. We see some of our brothers and sisters living in the United States are returning to their countries. It would be that the economy in Bolivia is improving or it's worsening in the United States. I don't know, but I'm very pleased that our brothers and sisters resident in this country and are returning to Bolivia. There are not very many of them, but they have shown the way to return to their countries. Certainly here there will be many observers from the European Union. We greet them. Certainly there, we acknowledge that you live better, although in our forum, with our policies, it is possible to live well, but there are these asymmetries from one continent to another, from South America to North America, and looking at Europe. These asymmetries are profound. The most recent of our compatriots who've gone to Europe have gone because they found no work in Bolivia. The minimum wage is very low indeed. Those who manage to earn $200 or $300 go to Europe and earn €1,000 a month. So there will be continuing migratory flows because of these economic differences, because of these asymmetries between one continent and another. And I feel it is important for governments and states from the United Nations to consider very seriously this issue of the asymmetry that prevails between one continent and another, to look at how it is possible to seek a balance, how it is possible to curb or lessen these deep economic differences. I feel that it is important to build a multipolar world with our obligations being considered, so that nations can start to develop new policies at a world level. We are here in the United Nations. In my most recent addresses, in the regular meetings of the United Nations, I voice some differences with the United Nations, and I cannot hide my views, because the rules of the United Nations, particularly considering the Security Council of the United Nations, these rules need to be democratized. Democracy is waxing throughout Latin America, but not democracies which are subordinated to imperialism, but liberating democracies. Yesterday, there were national elections in our brother nearby Republic of Paraguay. And this morning we heard that our brother and companion Fernando Luvo won. We welcome his victory. As a father of the Catholic Church, joining with the struggle of peoples, with another way of thinking what authority should be, authority of service to peoples. I feel that these liberating democracies are arising. So therefore, why could we not democratize the United Nations? It is not possible that there should be in the United Nations countries in the first rank and countries in a second. It is not possible for the United Nations to have lifelong members with voting and veto rights. This has to end, brothers and sisters. It is not possible that some countries should hold all the power and others none. If there is an organization of the United Nations, I would say that if this doesn't change, if it doesn't become democratized, we should not say the United Nations, but UNO, unity of original indigenous peoples of the world. But we need bodies, organizations, which can become democratized, and in the framework of democracy, the various regions and countries of the world can live together. The fourth point is that of water. Water as a human right, a right of all the living beings on this planet. You know, a brother said to me, we can live without light, without fire, without energy, but we cannot live without water. So water is life. And it is not possible that there should be policies allowing the privatization of water. You know, in addition to defending the cocoa leaf, in addition to defending land, in 2000, a group of worker, farmer, indigenous companions, those from Cochabamba, we organized ourselves to combat the privatization of water. And there is long experience of mobilization here. You know, we as indigenous peoples have not been able to study in universities. Our best university are these mobilizations. Our best school is that of the ongoing debates in our lasting fora. And in 2000 in Cochabamba in Bolivia, we were able in this way to identify those internal enemies who are privatizing water and those external enemies who are living from trade in water. But water is not just a natural resource giving life. I must very much regret these policies with an economic model which are not based on the equality of peoples, because they lead to climate change in the sources of water. In our snow-capped mountains, amongst the peaks, we are seeing problems with glaciers melting, with drought causing deforestation. Brothers and sisters, united in this forum, here I would propose an international convention on water to protect water sources, guaranteeing it as a human right, preventing its privatization and appropriation by the few. Fifth point, development of clean and eco-friendly energies. We must put an end to the wasteful use of energy. In 100 years, we're finishing fossil fuels, which have been formed over millions of years. Those who promote biofuels are making a serious mistake. I can't understand that some presidents, some models of economic growth can put aside land for luxurious vehicles and not for human beings. I can't understand how it is possible for some movements to use land for construction and not for human lives, for constructing these vehicles. Here, we need to discuss with governments to ensure that the earth, that land, is used for the benefit of human beings, of living beings, and that earth is not used just for motor vehicles. Then, keeping land for biofuels. This is creating problems in the economies of various regions throughout the world, affecting families. For example, in my country, rice is rising in price. The price of bread is rising. And this is not just a problem in one country. In some regions, lands are being put aside on a grand scale for so-called biofuels. And here, forgive me, I'm going to say something that many people will not like to hear. But after having heard from the World Bank and the IMF, they know that a rise in world prices of certain products is the result of the growing of biofuels. I think that this is the first time that the IMF and the World Bank agree on this. But they are saying that we have to prevent policies of this sort leading to hunger and poverty. Now, yesterday it happened that I met with some experts from Japan, and they talked to me of alternative forms of energy. I welcome the fact that there are other ways of dealing with the energy problem, for example, geothermal energy, solar energy, wind energy, the Aeolian energy, HEP on a small and medium scale in certain regions. I know that on the macro scale, hydroelectric power is going to affect our peoples always. These are issues that have to be discussed, have to be debated. It is important for us to have energy. Now, sixth point, respect for Mother Earth. I say here again that no sector, no expert, no specialist can debate with indigenous leaders as regards respecting Mother Earth. But how is it possible from the indigenous movement to bring influence to bear on other social sectors, be they urban or rural? How is it possible, for example, to influence collegial institutions, as they're called, so that they can understand that the earth is our mother? And brothers and sisters, I have learned much from my indigenous brothers and sisters in South America, who can privatize or hire out her mother, his mother. So land, this earth, cannot be understood as a good in the mercantile sense. The capitalist movement wants to turn earth, Mother Earth, into a raw material and to trade in it. I believe when we look at the earth and living together in a community, we in the indigenous movements can persuade these existing economic systems going for privatization. I would that we could make progress. Alas, some people say, oh, President, you're talking in vain. It's not possible to change things. But I want to continue to be an optimist, because there are so many ways of living together in a community. Where I was born, for example, there is still no private property, no individual property. There is common land. There is an area for stock raising, an arable area, agricultural area. Would that an end were put to privatization so that we could live in this way together in communities. So I feel that respect for Mother Earth is fundamental if we are to save planet Earth. And if we save planet Earth, certainly we can save life, we can save humanity. We cannot have policies of land grabs as our brothers in Brazil without land have said, much land in a few hands so that many hands are without land. This is a message that we hear, but there is still resistance in many countries. I just want to say to you that the best way of seeking equality when it comes to land is unity, is through organization. The best way of respecting these collectively owned community lands is through unity and organization. I would say that the best title we can have to the possession of land is our organization, brothers and sisters. Then a central issue as a seventh point for our debate, and this is being taken into account in our political constitution in Bolivia as well. Basic utilities, basic services, light, education, transport, these must be taken into account, considered as a human right, because we're talking of basic services. If these are a human right, then they cannot be the preserve of private trade. They have to be for public service. And there is a profound difference here with some countries, with their presidents and their industrialists, where they live by trading in basic services, in utilities. I would say that these should never be the preserve of the multinationals for private trade. As an eighth point, we should consume what is necessary. Consume what we produce locally. Put an end to consumerism, to waste and luxury. We cannot understand that some families just seek luxury while millions and millions are not able to live well. Millions are dying of hunger every year, while millions of dollars are being spent to combat the obesity of the other pole of society. As cocoa syrup is being used, as I've heard that this is a medicine against obesity, as we're spending millions on this, on how to get thin, whereas millions are dying, it's an issue of social conscience. The food crisis is going to put an end to the free market, because it is not acceptable that there should be exports from countries suffering hunger. The most recent conflict in Bolivia, as you know, saw some agro-industrialists industrializing oil, for example, processing oil, choosing to sell abroad rather than in their own country. And this is not a political, even an economic issue. These industrialists want to harm Evo Morales. People are always trying to bring me down. They prefer to sell their oil abroad rather than in Bolivia. Some multinationals, some private companies do this, and they manipulate trade from an economic and political point of view. We are experiencing this in Bolivia. But this requires us also to govern as we are doing. We have producers organized in cooperatives, in associations, creating undertakings, industries in the hands of the people. We have to do this or recover these industries which are permanently engaged in sabotage. I want to say this, thinking of life, of the people, of the majority. Not everything can be done just for the multinationals. Now, as the penultimate point for our discussion, ninth point, promote diversity of cultures and economies. There are so many of us. We're so different. Although the indigenous movement has always been excluded. We put forth this call, unity and diversity, in a multinational state where there is room for everybody. In a multinational state, black, white, whatever color we may be, all men and women. I want to say that in Bolivia, we're all people of Bolivia. Some can trace ourselves back for thousands of years. Others have come recently. Those who've lived here for millennia are very poor. Those who have come recently are very rich. And with a new political constitution, in Bolivia, we want there to be equality between Bolivians who've been in Bolivia for millennia and the contemporary Bolivians. In this way, we wish to respect our diversity, not just physiognomic diversity, but economic diversity. The economy is in the hands of associations and cooperatives, respecting private property. We can respect this, but what we cannot respect is the pillage of our natural resources of our brothers and sisters. Then, to conclude, as our 10th point, because it is not new trying to live well, we are just trying to recover the past. Live well, but not to live better at a price for others. Establish a unitarian socialism with harmony with Mother Earth. We talk always of socialism. I share this, but I believe that we need to improve this socialism. Socialism is not just defending man. It is an obligation of peoples to live in harmony with Mother Earth, to respect forms of life in the community, in society. The socialism of the 21st century must be improved, including the indigenous peoples of the world who defend, essentially, Mother Earth. Brothers and sisters, there are two ways forward. The one to capitalism and death, or we can choose the indigenous route of harmony with nature, with life, to save mankind. And I feel that this obligation on peoples, falls to social movements, to national ones. This is the best way forward to save mankind, to save planet Earth. I also wish to say to you that the indigenous peoples are not going to fall silent until we have achieved true change, because our voice is the voice of the snow-covered summits losing their snow. There is a song of those who are losing their white covering, their white cape. But now we're in 2008, and these snow-capped mountains are seeing their snow melting. And a companion said to me, mayors are going to have a budget so that they can paint the summits of the mountains white. And he's right. If the destruction of the environment is robbing us of our snows, the authorities are going to have to find some sort of funding to paint them white to keep the tourists. I feel that this is a very profound debate that we must engage in. Brothers and sisters, every day that goes by brings a new lesson for me, but I come essentially to greet you, brothers from Mexico, Guatemala, Ecuador, old companions of Peru. We've been mobilized together, and we are still mobilized with more strength, with more unity, and we acknowledge your historic fight to ensure that there is this declaration of indigenous peoples in the United Nations, because what we fought for 20 or 30 years, we have achieved. We have achieved this in Bolivia. We have proved this statement last year, and we now have a national law to implement its precepts. We hope that other countries will turn this Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples into legal provisions, which will make it possible to develop in a way that makes good the harm suffered by the indigenous peoples of the world. Ladies and gentlemen, we are permanently listening here to the problems that exist. There will always be problems. I have to draw that conclusion, but I must say that I'm very pleased, very happy, not disappointed, nor concerned, because these groups who enslaved our peoples during the colonial times, during neoliberalism, during past times, are listening to me. When the groups in the cities are questioning the mistakes of Evo Morales as a president, every day we have people questioning. I'm not worried. We continue our fight. In this way, we can have greater ideological clarity to face up to those groups who don't want to lose their privileges, those who live in luxury who don't want to lose it, those who don't want to lose their lands and continue fighting. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, thank you very much for inviting me here. I'm delighted once again to be with you in this international forum.
I thank the President of Bolivia, His Excellency Mr. Evo Morales, for his statement and for inspiring us to continue with our struggles. We wish you more power in the work that you are doing to bring about equality and social justice in Bolivia, and we hope that this work that you are doing will be replicated all over the world. We look upon you as a model to bring about these kinds of changes in whichever way you can. Thank you very much, Mr. Morales. I now... I now give the floor to Ambassador Leo Mirores, President of the Economic and Social Council. You have the floor, sir.
Merci, Madame la Présidente.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chairperson, ladies and gentlemen, members of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Sir Assistant Secretary General, ladies and gentlemen, current and former representatives of Indigenous peoples, ambassadors, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure for me to address this assembly. And I thank Madam Chairperson for inviting me to this opening ceremony for the seventh session of the Permanent Forum. I am particularly pleased for the privilege given to me to address this forum that is meeting for the first time since the General Assembly's adoption of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And I would like to take this opportunity to commend the Indigenous Peoples worldwide and the states and the system of the United Nations for this historical success. I should also like to commend the General Assembly, which once again has been in keeping with the vast hopes of the peoples of the world that they place in the United Nations by working out a landmark human rights instrument. Of course, and we all know, Madam Chairperson, that this declaration is a remarkable document from a number of standpoints. but as President of the Economic and Social Council, I am particularly interested in Article 42, which provides that the United Nations, its bodies, and in particularly the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the specialized institutions, particularly at the level of countries and the states, promote respect and full application of the provisions of this declaration and ensure that it is done effectively. This is therefore a challenging task, and I look forward therefore to the suggestions from this forum on the subject of how this mandate is to be implemented. To my way of thinking, this declaration also attested the growing importance that the international community, and in particular the Economic and Social Council, give to indigenous peoples and the issues that are of concern to them. From this standpoint, I am proud of the leading role of the Economic and Social Council that it has and continues to play as a body under which the Permanent Forum works. I believe that it is encouraging to note that this forum has committed to effectively carry out its mandate, that is, promote the integration and coordination of activities related to indigenous issues in the United Nations system. As president of ECOSOC, I am clearly particularly interested by the contributions that this forum will make to the actions of our council. It is encouraging to see that the forum has already cooperated inter alia with the Commission on the Status of Women, the Forum on Forests, and the Commission on Sustainable Development. In this regard, the forum should continue to encourage coordination with respect to indigenous issues and should continue to assist ECOSOC in this area. Madam Chairperson, in this regard, I should like to take this opportunity to personally thank you for having taken part last week in the informal preparatory meeting on the theme of the high-level debate for 2008 of ECOSOC. Via your valuable contributions to the roundtable on vulnerable countries and peoples, you recalled how important it is to make sure that the voice of indigenous peoples is heard in the discussions of the United Nations. Let me thank you once again for that, Madam Chairperson. By deciding to take interest particularly in climate change, this forum is, Madam Chair, once again demonstrating its commitment to working in a coordinated manner within the United Nations system, and I am certain that these deliberations will provide valuable contributions to the ministerial consideration this year, whose theme will be implementation of the objectives and commitments agreed upon at the international level with respect to sustainable development. The current discussions in this forum on the MDGs will also be useful to our action. Madam Chairperson, ladies and gentlemen, before I conclude, I should also like to commend the members of the forum who have been elected or appointed, and I see among you many new faces, and I recognize others, those members who are in their second term. This forum has always found the way to bring about a consensus in dealing with some of the most difficult issues that one could imagine. I also know that you will be up to the challenge and that you will provide to us a set of recommendations that are concrete that will improve the action of the organization. And what is even more important, they will greatly improve the destiny of indigenous peoples. Therefore, I wish all of you a fruitful seventh session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. And I wish you every success. Thank you.
I thank the president of ECOSOC for his statement, and also to thank him for the sustained support that the ECOSOC has been giving the permanent forum, and we will indeed strengthen this kind of a working relation, as we believe that the ECOSOC, as our mother body, is the body that's going to make these changes that we all are asking for. Thank you very much, Mr. Ambassador. I now give the floor to Mr. Jomo Sundaram, Assistant Secretary General for Economic Development, who will make a statement on behalf of Mr. Xia Zhukang, Undersecretary General for Economic and Social Affairs and Coordinator of the Second International Decade of the World's Indigenous Peoples. You have the floor, sir.
Madam Chair, distinguished members of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, Your Excellency, the President of the Economic and Social Council, Ambassador Leo Morales, distinguished representatives of member states, indigenous organizations, United Nations system, and other intergovernmental organizations, non-governmental organizations, excellencies, indigenous elders, indigenous parliamentarians, ladies and gentlemen. It is a special pleasure for me to extend a warm welcome to all of you on behalf of the Under Secretary General for Economic and Social Affairs, Mr. Shah Zhu Kang. Mr. Shah will address this forum on the 1st of May, as will the President of the General Assembly. I wish to extend my congratulations to the members of the Permanent Forum for the election or re-election and appointment to this august body, and I wish you every success in the discharge of your very important functions. The high interest and participation in this 7th session of the Permanent Forum testifies to the increasing awareness of Indigenous peoples' issues. The forum is thus fulfilling its mandate to make the challenges, opportunities, and good practices in this field more visible for public policy and for action. This session of the forum marks a turning point following the historic adoption last September of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. The declaration stands as a major achievement for the United Nations, to which member states, indigenous peoples, and indeed this forum contributed in a spirit of partnership. The role of the Permanent Forum in the promotion of respect for and the full application of the provisions of the declaration and in its follow-up under Article 42 will be crucial. We are looking forward to the forum's recommendations on this front as we move from declaration to action. The forum's focus on economic and social development has promoted major initiatives in the United Nations system, states, and indigenous peoples' communities, aiming at eliminating discrimination, exclusion, and poverty. Some of the recent achievements include the adoption earlier this year of the United Nations Development Group's Guidelines on Indigenous Peoples' Issues, which will bring solutions for and with Indigenous peoples closer to United Nations operations in the field. We also have several cutting-edge inputs into this session, such as the Global Synthesis Report on Indicators of Indigenous Peoples' Well-being, Poverty and Sustainability, and the report of the forum's expert meeting held in the Russian Federation on perspectives of relationships between indigenous peoples and industrial corporations. These inputs will further promote indigenous issues in the United Nations development agenda, encompassing the Millennium Development Goals and the full array of internationally agreed development goals, with particular emphasis on improving the situation of the poorest and most vulnerable peoples. The same purpose will be served by the session's special theme, Climate Change, Biocultural Diversity and Livelihoods, the Stewardship Role of Indigenous Peoples and New Challenges, and also by its focus on Indigenous languages and its regional focus on the Indigenous issues of the Pacific. Distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, allow me to take this occasion to thank Spain and the Russian Federation for hosting meetings of the Permanent Forum during the past year. I also thank all the governments that have made generous contributions to the Trust Fund on Indigenous Issues, which supports the Forum on its ongoing work. This year, we can say with confidence that Indigenous peoples' issues are entering an era of implementation of standards and policies. What a wonderful way to mark and make use of this year, in which we celebrate the 60th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, recognizing and working to realize the dignity and respect due to Indigenous peoples as part of the human family. I urge the international community to close the implementation gap as far as Indigenous peoples are concerned and to take action for their well-being and with their full and effective participation. Thank you very much for your attention.
I thank Mr. Jomo Sundaram, the Assistant Secretary General, for his statement. Thank you very much. I shall now give the floor to Mr. Bernie Yates, Deputy Secretary, Department of Families, Housing, Community Services, and Indigenous Affairs of Australia. You have the floor, sir.
Madam Chair, fellow delegates and guests, first I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are meeting. I am honoured to be leading the Australian delegation to this seventh session of the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, and I would like to thank the forum for this opportunity to speak about the theme of the forum and the direction of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander policy in Australia. In November last year, Australia elected a new government, with the Australian Labor Party coming to office after more than a decade in opposition. Prime Minister Kevin Rudd has moved quickly to begin implementing his government's key commitments. Among them are several measures particularly relevant to the deliberations of this forum. On 13 February, the Australian Parliament offered an apology to the stolen generations, the thousands of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children who were removed from their families and communities. It was a remarkable day in our nation's history, acknowledging past injustices, but just as importantly, laying claim to a future that embraces all Australians. Australia's Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Social Justice Commissioner, Tom Calmer, described the apology as directly benefiting all members of the stolen generations by validating their experiences and also by building a bridge between all Australians. I will have more to say on the apology later. First, I want to go to issues that directly relate to the forum's theme. On its first day in office, the government ratified the Kyoto Protocol, a significant step in the fight against climate change, at home and with the international community. Australia is very vulnerable to the effects of climate change. Ours is a fragile environment of climatic extremes. Droughts and floods are a way of life for our farmers. But climate change poses a new and serious threat. Climate change threatens the survival of the Great Barrier Reef, one of the wonders of the world, and the Kakadu Wilderness. With a population concentrated along our coastline, rising sea levels and extreme storms are a risk to the sustainability of coastal communities. In our northernmost islands in the Torres Strait, as with our Pacific Island neighbours, there is a risk that people will become climate change refugees as their island homes become uninhabitable. This will be a key consideration in the design of our overseas aid program. The government wants to be more than part of the global problem of climate change. It's determined to play an active role in the solution. After signing the Kyoto Protocol, Prime Minister Rudd attended the United Nations Climate Conference in Bali, where Australia was actively engaged in the launch of a two-year negotiation on Kyoto post-2012. Domestically, the government is committed to a target of a 60% reduction in emissions by 2050. One of the government's strategies is to assist one of the country's largest landholder groups, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, to take advantage of carbon trading through abatement enterprise. Hundreds of new ranger positions will be created to work on protecting biodiversity in Indigenous lands and waters. I return now to the apology. On the first day of the new Parliament, the Prime Minister delivered a motion of apology. In a speech broadcast live around the country, Mr. Rudd apologised for the grief and loss inflicted on all Indigenous peoples by the policies of successive governments. He said, "To the stolen generations, I say the following. As Prime Minister of Australia, I am sorry. On behalf of the Government of Australia, I am sorry. on behalf of the Parliament of Australia, I am sorry, and I offer you this apology without qualification. We apologise for the hurt, the pain and the suffering we, the Parliament, have caused you by the laws that previous parliaments have enacted. We apologise for the indignity, the degradation and the humiliation these laws embodied. We offer this apology to the mothers, the fathers, the brothers, the sisters, the families and communities whose lives were ripped apart by the actions of successive governments under successive parliaments. Mr. Rudd spoke of the need for reconciliation. There comes a time in the history of nations when their peoples must become fully reconciled to their past if they are to go forward with confidence to embrace their future. Our nation, Australia, has reached such a time, and that is why the Parliament is today here assembled to deal with this unfinished business of the nation, to remove a great stain from the nation's soul, and in a true spirit of reconciliation, to open a new chapter in the history of this great land, Australia. The Prime Minister said, through the apology, we could build a bridge of respect, a new relationship characterised by mutual respect and mutual responsibility. And he set specific targets to close the gap in Indigenous life expectancy within a generation, to halve the gap in mortality rates for Indigenous children under five within a decade, to halve the gap in reading, writing and numeracy achievements for Indigenous children within a decade, to halve the gap in employment outcomes within a decade, and to give all Indigenous four-year-olds in remote communities access to preschool within 5 years. All state and territory governments have signed up to the same targets, and the Prime Minister will deliver a progress report at the start of every parliamentary year. Mr. Rudd also announced the formation of a bipartisan joint policy commission, led by himself and the Leader of the Opposition. Its first task is the development and implementation of an effective housing strategy for remote communities over the next 5 years. Central to the government's approach is building working partnerships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. As our Minister for Indigenous Affairs, the Honourable Jenny Macklin, said recently, solutions can't be imposed on people. To work and be sustainable, the solutions have to be developed on the ground and driven by the communities that own them. The government is committed to the emergency response in the Northern Territory to protect Indigenous children from the shocking levels of abuse and neglect reported in the Little Children Are Sacred report. A comprehensive independent review of the Northern Territory emergency response will be undertaken at the 12-month mark and will start in the middle of this year. This will identify what is effective and what needs to be changed or strengthened. The new government recognises the importance of the Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples globally. Our national apology heralds a new relationship with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples based on respect, cooperation and mutual responsibility. As is normal practice on international instruments, detailed consultations are currently being undertaken with Australia's state and territory governments, as well as with Indigenous organisations and other key stakeholders on the declaration. In closing, I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak here today and leave you with the words of the Prime Minister of Australia on the prospects of reconciliation. We embrace with pride admiration and awe these great and ancient cultures we are blessed, truly blessed to have amongst us. Cultures that provide a unique, uninterrupted human thread linking our Australian continent to the most ancient prehistory of our planet. And growing from this new respect, to see our Indigenous brothers and sisters with fresh eyes, with new eyes, and with our minds wide open as to how we might tackle together the great practical challenges that Indigenous Australia faces in the future.
I thank Mr. Bernie Yates for his statement. Thank you very much, sir. I shall now give the floor to Ms. Gunilla Olson, Executive Director, Action Plan, International Fund for Agricultural Development Change Management, Office of the President. You have the floor, Madam.
Thank you very much. Madam Chairperson, distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, the President of IFAD, Mr. Lennart Boge, has asked me to express his regret at not being able to address this session of the Permanent Forum. The issue of the rights of Indigenous peoples is one to which he attaches particular importance. Over 300 million Indigenous peoples worldwide account for 5% of the global population, yet represent 15% of the world's poor. Most of them live in rural areas, often considered marginal for mainstream development. Hills and mountains, forests, dry lands, deserts, small islands, and the Arctic. Given IFAD's explicit mandate to enable rural poor people to overcome poverty and hunger through investments in agriculture and rural livelihoods, the empowerment of Indigenous peoples matters deeply to my organization. Even when immediate attention is on the soaring food prices or the real food crisis, we do not stray from our commitments. It is a genuine honour for me to represent IFAD at this session, the first since the approval last September of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. This historic declaration validates the tireless struggle of Indigenous peoples worldwide for recognition of their rights, their identity as peoples, their cultures, and their heritage. The declaration is indeed a great achievement, but its true and lasting value will depend on our collective ability to translate its noble words into substantive and sustainable actions. But to do this, there are challenges we must overcome. First, poverty. Indigenous peoples are amongst the poorest people in the world, and from IFAD's 30 years of experience, we have learned that poverty is intimately linked to marginalization, economic, social, political, and cultural. We have learned that in order to empower poor rural people, in order to enable Indigenous peoples to pursue their own self-determined development, we must first actively listen to them. We need to listen to what poverty means for Indigenous peoples, how it affects their well-being, or indeed their ill-being. We know that poverty is more than low income. It's about historical processes of dispossession and discrimination. It's about lack of respect for Indigenous peoples' political, cultural, and economic rights. It's about decision on territories and on the use and misuse of natural resources being imposed, without the participation of those whose livelihoods are at stake, and without their free, prior, and informed consent. If we collectively fail to listen to what Indigenous peoples can tell us about poverty and about their solutions to overcome it as primary stakeholders of development initiatives in their territories, then any action we take will be meaningless or possibly even counterproductive. A second challenge is climate change. Global warming is already having an enormous impact on the livelihoods of Indigenous peoples, many of whom live in fragile ecosystems at serious risk from degradation and desertification. While Indigenous peoples are amongst those least responsible for global warming, they're often the most affected, not least because their livelihood invariably depend on natural resources and biodiversity. Remember, indigenous peoples worldwide account for 5% of the global population, yet they customarily own, occupy or use 22% of the world's land surface, and they presently manage 11% of the world's forest lands. But rising sea levels and coastal and land erosion are displacing indigenous communities from their traditional land and territories. This matters not only to those whose livelihoods or indeed whose lives are at stake, but it matters also to the rest of the world. It's a fact that indigenous peoples maintain within their lands and territories 80% of the world's biodiversity. They are the custodians of this planet's natural resources. And if we fail to protect the rights of indigenous peoples and to acknowledge and support their capacity to manage their territories in a sustainable way, we effectively jeopardize our global natural resources. The policy response to climate change is an issue of social and environmental justice. It's about rights and power. Indigenous peoples should be empowered to play an even more active role than they do today in enhancing the resilience of the ecosystems in which they live. They are proven experts at adapting to new environmental challenges. Their ancestral memory is a storehouse full of thousands of different species that could respond to new climatic conditions, such as varieties of rice that are resistant to salt, drought, or heavy rain. A third challenge is biofuels. Growing scarcity and high prices of fossil fuels, as well as concerns about climate change and energy security, are stimulating interest in massive expansion of biofuel production. Large-scale monoculture plantations for biofuel are placing increasing pressure on global land resources and causing increased insecurity in land tenure. And this is reinforced by the present high food prices, which lead to rapidly increasing land prices. Poor rural people, and in particular indigenous peoples, often lack formal title to land and are already finding that traditional tenure and user rights are breaking down. Madam Chairperson, in the face of these challenges, it's increasingly important to empower indigenous peoples to manage their land, territories and resources in a sustainable way. We must engage with indigenous peoples as full and equal partners in development policies and programs. We must ensure that the principle of free, prior, informed consent is respected in the design and implementation of strategies and programs affecting them. And we must continue supporting indigenous peoples through development projects and through the protection of their rights over their ancestral lands and territories. Only then can we avoid what was referred to in the World Bank workshop last month as the last great land grab. Madam Chairperson, the President of IFAD has asked me to convey to you that IFAD takes its engagement with indigenous peoples very seriously. We are ready and willing to contribute further to the international effort to enable indigenous peoples to become fully part of the solution to today's challenges. IFAD has invested around US$1.3 billion to date in support of indigenous peoples, representing about 13% of IFAD's total investments. And we devote more than 30% of our programs in Latin America and Asia in support of indigenous communities. Through our new strategic framework, targeting policy and country strategies, we now have a platform for a more systematic engagement with indigenous peoples. And we're using the declaration and the recent UNDG guidelines as a framework to shape our own principles of engagement with indigenous peoples. The process has just started, and the first consultation with indigenous leaders was held in Rome in March. We will promote partnerships with the CDIR system on agriculture research and the integration in formal science and technology of indigenous peoples' traditional knowledge, their environmentally friendly technologies, and their role as stewards and custodians of biodiversity. We will continue to manage the Indigenous Peoples Assistance Facility that finances through small grants, microprojects designed and implemented by Indigenous Peoples communities and organizations. In our policy on promoting equitable access to land and tenure security, we will ensure that we're guided by the specific land rights of indigenous peoples and the principle of free, prior, and informed consent. And we are exploring the scope for establishing at IFAD a forum for dialogue with indigenous peoples to share ideas and experiences and to make their voices heard, not least in the development of country strategies and IFAD-funded projects and programs. Madam Chairperson, IFAD is fully committed to work closely with the Permanent Forum and the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Peoples' Issues, particularly on the implementation of the UN Declaration and on climate change. Through our collective efforts to support and promote self-determined development with Indigenous peoples, we can learn from their experience, benefit from their generations of knowledge, and confront the challenges that threaten our common well-being, both today and in the future. As a chief from Nigeria once said, I conceive that the land belongs to a vast family of which many are dead, few are living, and countless numbers are still unborn. It's in the interest of those countless numbers tomorrow that action today is already long overdue. Thank you for this opportunity to address the Permanent Forum.
Thank you very much, Madam Gunilla Olson, who spoke on behalf of the President of IFAD, Mr. Leonard Bogue. And thank you very much to IFAD for the sustained support that you have been giving to indigenous peoples, and in particular, the idea of coming up with a forum of indigenous peoples within IFAD. Thank you very much. I'd like now to adjourn this meeting, but before I do that, I would like to give the floor to the Secretary of the meeting to make some announcements. You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam. At 1:15 in Doug Hammarskjöld Library Auditorium, there will be a symposium on the implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of the Indigenous Peoples, organized by the Mission of Guatemala and the Mission of Namibia. So everybody is welcome. It will also contain the element of expert panel on what the declaration means to indigenous peoples. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have reached the time limit for this meeting, and this afternoon we will start with agenda item number 3, the special theme of the Permanent Forum session this year. So this meeting is adjourned, and we will see you at 3 o'clock. Thank you very much. Well done.